This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Great basketball philosopher Rasheed Wallace once said, "Ball don't lie." And I love that in some high school in North Carolina somewhere, I believe in Durham, North Carolina, Rasheed Wallace is going to at one point scream that at a high school referee as a head coach of a high school team. And that is just, if I could be there for that, oh, it would just make this podcast. Welcome back to the Dropping Knives podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas from orangebloods.com. We are up to episode 31, and we are done with the regular season for college basketball. Conference tournaments have either begun across the country or will begin this week. The Big 12 tournament begins this Wednesday. Texas doesn't play until Thursday. It actually has technically a bye until it plays Kansas in the first game for Texas at the Big 12 tournament. We'll talk about that matchup some on this podcast, but there's a lot to go over. Unfortunately for Texas, it's not all good news. As many Texas fans know, Saturday, if you look at places like Bart Torvik, that does a lot of NCAA tournament analysis and things like that, bracketology, anywhere bracket matrix that compiles basically the average of, like, I don't know, 110 brackets published across the country, all of these places, basically it was pretty similar across the board. If Texas beat TCU at home on Saturday, it was going to get in the NCAA tournament. I think the chances heading into that game, at Bart Torvik, which projects, projected a 17-14 overall record for Texas, 99 in the Big 12, and a win over TCU. I think the percentages were something like 94% that Texas would get in the NCAA tournament. The previous 10 resumes similar to Texas at that point, based on that projection, all made the NCAA tournament. So really, it was win and get in type situation. I just would have had a hard time seeing Texas, if I won that game, not getting the NCAA tournament. Well, Texas didn't win that game. In the TCU game, we've seen this a few times under Shaka Smart. Normally, Texas, going back to last season, was pretty good with its back against the wall in kind of must-win situations. But TCU, it was an interesting matchup because TCU entered the game just as desperate as Texas. They had their slide in the late Big 12 schedule. They were trying to play for their postseason lives. And it just so turned out that TCU was more desperate. They were more urgent. They played with more confidence. I think that they played with more energy. I think collectively they played with more effort. Not to say that Texas didn't try, but I think that TCU looked like a team that was playing to win, playing for its postseason lives, playing to win and get in, whereas Texas kind of played with the weight of the situation on its shoulders, kind of played more not to lose, things like that. The frustrating thing for Texas and its fans, and Shaka Smart wore it all over his face in the postgame press conference, and we'll get to that in a little bit here, but TCU did all the things that Texas talks about, the urgency, the energy, the going and taking the game, the confidence, and all of these things that we just haven't seen Texas consistently do. And you think, Texas enters that game, I think, as a 7 or an 8 point favorite. They knew what was at stake. They knew, it was a last home game for Dylan Osakowski. Heck, it might have even been a last home game from Jackson Hayes if he goes on to the NBA. Everybody knew what was at stake, and just to see Texas play that way, surprising is not the right word, because we've seen this before. But really, besides Courtney Ramey, Jackson Hayes, Matt Coleman in the first half and part of the second half, and Royce Hand when he was briefly on the floor, everyone else was kind of not out of it, but just the game looked too big for them. Looked too big for Jace Febres. Dylan Osakowski, Shaka Smart said this earlier in the week when he was talking about seniors on senior day. It usually goes one or two ways. They're usually awesome and the team's awesome, or the senior just is kind of bothered by all the emotions and all that stuff, and the team doesn't perform. And it was definitely the latter. I mean, Nosikowski at one point didn't, you know, wasn't completely benched in the second half, but he didn't play a lot as Texas was just kind of searching for any and everything to try to spark the team. And just, what do you say? What do you say other than Texas is 16-15 overall now and is entering the Big 12 tournament in a must-win situation as relates to the NCAA tournament? Because if Texas doesn't beat Kansas in the Big 12 tournament, how can you put them in the NCAA tournament 500 overall? I know that they have a lot of big wins, including North Carolina on a neutral site and Purdue at home, which those two teams are at the top of their respective conferences, two of the best conferences in college basketball. So finding good wins is not a problem for Texas. And, you know, those quadrant one wins that are so valuable and things like that. And Texas, as it relates to quadrants one, two, three, and four, doesn't have any horrific losses. It doesn't have any quadrant four losses. It doesn't really have many quadrant three losses. But it does have some bad home losses from the perspective of Providence. Definitely Radford. VCU's turned out to be a really good, not really good, but a good basketball team, like a top 30-ish type of team. But still, that's a game that Texas should have won at home. And then you look at, you know, missteps on the road at Oklahoma State, although they've played really well down the stretch. Give Mike Boynton a lot of credit, man. He's so limited what he does. I mean, he basically has six guys. Remember after he played Texas and Austin during the postgame press conference, he's like, we had to have tryouts to see if we could find guys just so we could practice because they didn't have anywhere close to a 5-on-5. You know, just that's how limited the roster was. And, man, those guys fight for him. They've had some good results down the stretch. But at the point in time Texas was playing them, they're kind of going through a mess. That should have been a game that Texas won. Obviously, at Georgia was just a complete stinker of a game. Oh, God. That's as bad as defense if I've ever seen Texas play under Shaka Smart, and heck, a Shaka Smart team in general throughout his career. So that's the problem, is while you can find the good wins for Texas, you can find a lot of head-scratching results, and none more so than this most recent one against TCU at home. It just, you know, that was the opportunity for Texas. It controlled its destiny. It had an opportunity to just win and get in situation, and they came up short. And too often that's kind of been the case with this program. So, again, you're listening to the Drop and Dimes podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas from orangebloods.com. We're up to episode 31. And I mentioned just how completely crushed Shaka Smart looked after the game, dejected. It was as crushed as I've ever seen him after a game at Texas. And he's had some ones where he's been really down. But this was just like, I mean, it looked like, you know, somebody had delivered some bad news about a family member. And really, you know, he refers to, you know, his program, his players, his family, stuff like that. And TCU did deliver some bad news to his family. And this quote to me really stuck out. And you know, he's so big on trying to get guys to play a certain way from a mentality standpoint in terms of the urgency and the desperation and all those things. And respecting the opponent in the situation, you know, all those things that I mentioned that TCU did better than Texas. And he was asked about, you know, from a personal standpoint, the disappointment, because he opened the press conference. I mean, he said, quote, never been as disappointed as I am right now. And you could see it on his face. He was wearing it. And at one point he was asked, is part of that or a lot of that or some of that disappointment personally stem from your inability to get these guys to play consistently like you want them, as it specifically relates to all those things that TCU did? And he said, quote, absolutely. Consistency, I think it starts with your desire to be consistent. This game should be an unbelievably hurtful feeling for everyone that played in the game, anyone that coached in the game. And from there, you have to do something with it. Absolutely. I have to do a better job of getting these guys to feel that way and to, most importantly, carry it over. I think that that's what Shaka Smart is struggling the most with at Texas, is he hasn't been able to tap into these guys consistently in the areas he most wants to, in the areas that he builds his program around, in the areas that he emphasizes over and over and over again, whether it's verbally in practice, whether that's in one-on-one conversations with players, whether that's in team conversations, whether that's in a culture document, whatever it is. The areas that he emphasizes the most that are not schematic things, that are not defense and pick and roll and all of those sorts of things. Texas hasn't done them consistently. And I think that that's what he's really struggling with the most is, why is this happening? And it keeps happening. It's this whole season's been just a consistent thing where you can kind of point to that. You know, the first half at Oklahoma State earlier this season in that loss. Why did Texas, with an opportunity to become a 3-0 team in the Big 12, come out completely flat in the first half and then look completely different in the second half? You know, why does that happen? You know, the Kansas State game at home, you know, with an opportunity to really gain some momentum, pick up a huge, huge conference win against a team that was, I believe, the leader in the Big 12 conference at that time. Why did Texas not play as well as it could? It's, you know, Georgia. You know, you're going on the road against an inferior team. Why the lack of effort on defense? You know, at TCU, you know, why the inexplicable turnover issues and things like that? Like, it's just, you can find too many examples of that. And there's none more so present and, I guess, impactful than this latest one against TCU. And I think that that to me is what Shaka Smart is struggling the most with, is all of these things that he builds his program on in those kind of the controllable aspects. It's not showing consistently. And the weird thing is the guys that are showing it most consistently are his youngest players. I know Courtney Ramey had a rough game at Texas Tech, and I know he turned the ball over some against TCU. But mentally, he's probably been the most consistent guy lately. Maybe Jackson Hayes and Matt Coleman close second in that type of situation. And Dylan Osakowski before senior day was bringing it consistently as well. I don't want to leave him out, because I think that ever since about the midway point or a little bit forward in Big 12 play, he's been pretty solid in terms of, you know what you're going to get. But really his youngest guys, you know, Hayes and Ramey, kind of embody the most of what he wants from that mentality, that edge, that underdog type mentality, that aggressiveness, that confidence, and those things, which, I mean, I think it's fair to ask if you're a Texas fan that hears that, or college basketball fan or whatever, like, well, does that mean that what's going on in terms of program development with some of these older players is off? Because why are your youngest players showing that and not, you know, not your older players? And I think that's a fair question, but I think that that's what Shaka Smart is struggling the most with right now. And he basically said as much during the post-game press conference, is Texas doesn't consistently play with the type of mental approach that Smart really, really, really desires and preaches and builds his program around and all of those things. And I think that it's perplexing for him. I think it's perplexing for anybody that follows Texas closely. Definitely perplexing to me, because I know how much time he spends talking about it and you know, how they build their program and things like that. So it's, you know, for that type of situation against TCU on Saturday, where it's basically winning it in, you know what's at stake. You know you're at home. It's a last game for Dylan Osakowski, maybe a last game for Jackson Hayes. And to play that way, I mean, the game wasn't really ever close after TCU kind of took a commanding lead midway or late in the first half. It just didn't get back into a real competitive game, which led to Texas trying everything: zone, man-to-man, pressing, different lineups, all sorts of things. Although, not to get too off track, I'm still bothered by the idea that Texas didn't start fouling at like the 5-minute mark and just try to extend that game, because TCU's not really a good free throw shooting team. I mean, you kind of try to extend that game as much as you can. It can't happen with 2 minutes left or 2.5 minutes or something like that. It's got to happen earlier than that. So Texas, yeah, 16-15. They are what they are. You know, the Bill Parcells quote about the record. And I don't think that's always true about teams in football and, you know, really any college sport, football, basketball, and baseball. I think the schedule often influences the record some, but this team is definitely a 16-15 team. They are an inconsistent basketball team. And I know they've played one of the toughest schedules in the country, but they've had so many opportunities to win games. I mean, they're 4-10 in games decided by 6 points and less. And then you factor in games like TCU and then Georgia. those are two more games that they should have won. So really, you look at the efficiency. This should be a 20-win basketball team right now, or heck, even a 21-win basketball team. And let's also keep in mind that I think what also played into the fact that Smart just sat at the podium, just visibly crushed by what happened after TCU, because he had high expectations for this team. He genuinely believed they were going to break through, they're going to have a great year, they're going to win games in the NCAA tournament, and now it looks like none of those things are going to happen, barring a win over Kansas in the Big 12 tournament and perhaps a run in the Big 12 tournament. So speaking of the Big 12 tournament, Shocker Smart said yesterday on the Big 12 teleconference that Kerwin Roach II will be available to play against Kansas in Thursday's game. Not a surprise if you've read our reporting on orangebuzz.com and Kirk Bowles, the Austin American Statesman, reported a while back that Roach would return for the Big 12 tournament. I don't know what Snoop's role is going to be. I don't really know how you handle that if you're a head coach. I've already said before, I just would have, you know, cut my losses and said thanks, but, you know, we got to move on. Do you start him? Do you bring him off the bench? I don't really know what you do at that type of role. I mean, you know, Jace Febres has been really, really good at times lately, and he's also kind of disappeared in some other times. And, you know, disappearing against TCU, he was taken out of the game by Texas Tech in their defensive game plan. So I don't know what you do with Roach. I don't know how he's going to approach this game. Does he try to do too much and take 25 shots? Is he passive because he wants to, you know, let his teammates do stuff and he kind of feels the burden of not being there for them the last five regular season games? I don't know how he approaches that. I just think it's a total unknown as it relates to the Kansas game. And I did think it was interesting that Shaka Smart, when he described Roach, said that he's available to play. He didn't say he's going to play. Now, I'd be absolutely stunned if he doesn't play. But available to me was an interesting word because it, you know, it again leads to that kind of unknown territory. And what is his role going to be? You know, does he get inserted right back into the starting lineup? I know that there was a lot of frustration about, you know, him breaking another team rule again. So, you know, it's not hard to find frustration around the Texas program about that. So what is his role? We know that when Roach is at his best, he can change a game. He can win a game. You know, we saw that against North Carolina. We've seen it at some other times when he's in the right, you know, mindset and impactful on offense and defense. He's a game changer. And Texas can use game changers right now, especially when you're playing Kansas in the Big 12 tournament. So we'll see what his role is, but Shaka Smart did say yesterday he is available to play. He is cleared after, you know, sitting out the final five regular season games because of a violation of team rules, a university suspension. Not a team suspension, but a university suspension. So we'll see. As for Kansas, you know, Texas has got to be like you're kidding me. We get the Kansas draw in the Big 12 tournament. It's like you're playing a road game at the Sprint Center in Kansas City. I mean, if you're not Kansas, Kansas State, or Iowa State, you're on the road in the Big 12 tournament. That's just the way it is. I mean, they can say all they want about, oh, neutral site this, and it's a great place. And yeah, it's a cool venue. It's a cool venue. It's a, you know, the fans there love college basketball. But for a lot of those teams, they're on the road. If you're playing Kansas State, you're basically on the road. If you're playing Iowa State, you're basically on the road. If you're playing Kansas, you're basically on the road, unless any of those teams are playing each other. So, you know, not only does Texas have to play Kansas, but it's basically playing them on a road again. I guess if you want to be optimistic about Texas' chances, Texas has played Kansas well this year. You know, they lost by two at Kansas. They had that situation on the final play of the game where they could have, you know, won or tied the game and didn't execute, you know, the final play of the game. Will Kerwin Roach is in the wrong spot. He admitted it after the game, so on and so forth. And then when Kansas came back to Texas, what was that, about a month later? No, it wasn't a month later, probably about 2 weeks later. Texas beat them by 10 points. So Texas for the season is +8 against Kansas. But anytime you play Kansas, though, it's a tough situation, especially if we're playing Kansas at the Sprint Center in Kansas City. In terms of the matchup, you know, here's maybe the most, I guess, important thing about Roach's return, assuming he's going to play. I mean, again, he's available. I'd be stunned if he doesn't play. Is it gives Texas the opportunity to use four guard lineups again with Roach, Ramey, Febris, Coleman, Mitru Long. It gives them a lot of flexibility now to have four guard lineups, because we know with Dedrick Lawson and, you know, Kansas being a little undermanned in the front court with no Azubuike and then Sylvia D'Souza, you know, still sitting out, that Kansas at times will use a four guard lineup with Lawson at the five. And it's a tough lineup to handle if you don't have the right personnel on the floor. Although Kansas lately has been kind of playing more of a traditional lineup. You know, looking back at their game against Baylor, David McCormack and Mitch Lightfoot both played 18 minutes. And part of that, too, is LeGarrald Vick is not back. And I believe, you know, reportedly Bill Self said that there will be no other roster news this season. So he's not coming back, it sounds like. So that has kind of forced Kansas' hand a little bit in terms of playing a more traditional lineup. You know, looking at back what they did against Oklahoma, they started McCormack. Lawson didn't play. Oh, no, Lawson did that play. They started both Lawson and McCormack, so more of a traditional lineup. But I could see at times Kansas wanting to attack Texas with a four-guard lineup, and now Texas has that opportunity to kind of match them personnel-wise. But we'll see. I mean, as it's shown in the Big 12 standings, Kansas is not the invincible Kansas that we're used to. They just don't have that senior guard presence to go take over a game. Now, Devon Dotson is going to be a really good player, but Devon Dotson's also a freshman. Agbaje is a freshman. Quentin Grimes is a freshman. David McCormack is a freshman. I mean, Marcus Garrett, who killed Texas in the first game, is just a sophomore. And he's been, you know, great defensively, but he's still up and down some on offense. So this is kind of a limited Kansas bench. I think if they start McCormack, you're basically looking at their bench as Marcus Garrett and Mitch Lightfoot and maybe a little KJ Lawson. Maybe Charlie Moore, but he hasn't played much. It's probably just a seven-man rotation, maybe eight potentially. This is a game Texas could win, but we've said this about Texas all season. Texas is capable of beating anybody on its schedule, and it's capable of losing to anybody on its schedule. That doesn't change this week in the Big 12 tournament. I do wonder if Texas, coming off the complete clunker that it had against TCU, it's normally responded well. Its issue has been that it's been up and down. It can't consistently play at a similar level very often. Its issue isn't that the bounce back aspect of this. Texas has actually done that. I mean, off the top of my head, I think Texas has done that fairly well. You look at the Georgia loss at Georgia. They bounced back, beat Kansas by 10. You look at the Iowa State game, a super competitive game. Iowa State just made some games, made some shots down the stretch. Texas loses a close one on the road. They respond by beating Baylor by 12. You look at the home loss against Kansas State. They respond by beating Oklahoma State. The absolute heartbreaker loss at Baylor when they blew the big lead. They bounce back and blow out Iowa State with the big win. And then they, you know, not good at TCU. I mean, excuse me, not good at Texas Tech. And that's maybe why the TCU one was a little bit even more surprising, is that they didn't respond well to that. But you don't find many instances where Texas doesn't respond two games in a row. They're usually pretty good at responding in terms of the mental stuff and effort and execution and all those things. So I think it's going to be an entertaining game. I can't bring myself to pick Texas against Kansas in Kansas City in that tournament. It's just the success points to Kansas winning that basketball game. So it's hard to pick the Longhorns, but they've played Kansas well. I think they match up with Kansas well. I think that they, you know, if they're not going to be urgent now, when are they ever going to be urgent? Kansas, meanwhile, is in the NCAA tournament. Perhaps it wants to try to make a statement because it didn't win the regular season title by winning the tournament title. But this is a flawed Kansas team. It's a good Kansas team, but it's flawed. It's not the juggernaut it normally is. So I think that Texas, you know, one of the main bracketologists said today that Texas basically has to win the conference tournament to get in the NCAA tournament. I don't believe that. I actually think if Texas beats Kansas, they're going to get in the NCAA tournament. Just because if they were at 94, 95 percentile against TCU, why would they suddenly not be at that similar range if they beat Kansas on a neutral site? I just think that that would allow them to have a very, very good case to get in the NCAA tournament. Again, as I've said multiple times on this podcast, there just aren't many good bubble teams. There's not many good resumes. There aren't many resumes that include the type of wins that Texas has against that strength of schedule. And if, you know, many people have said, you know, for the last weeks, the Big 12 is going to get in 7 or 8 teams. So if they're, you know, we know Oklahoma State, unless it wins the conference tournament, we know West Virginia, unless it wins the conference tournament, those two teams are not going to get in the NCAA tournament. So that basically leaves a group of, you know, Oklahoma, who 7-11 in the Big 12, or TCU, or Texas. TCU might have punched its ticket about winning that game in Austin, but I don't know how the committee is going to view the Big 12. I just know that if Texas beats Kansas, it gets 2 games over that 500 mark. You've got 17 total wins. You get another quadrant 1 win. I just think at that point, Texas is in. Maybe it's a play-in game. I don't know. But if you just look at what their resume would be relative to a lot of those other resumes, I think that would put them in, even if that means they're going to end up being 17-16 because they lose the semifinal game after that. But I think a win against Kansas will make it tough to keep Texas out. But really, Texas's resume is going to end up being one of the most unique that bracketologists and the committee and everybody sees. Just because the overall record is one thing, and then you get the conference finish, and then you get these non-conference wins and all those things. So we'll see. And then that all leads us to the conversation about the Texas program once the season ends is, you know, Shaka Smart's future. That home loss against TCU, I think, is really complicated the conversation for all parties involved. You know, for Shaka, he's going to have some soul searching time where it's like, you know, why haven't I won here, and can I win here? I think the competitor of him believes that they're close, but I think he also believes that this year was going to be the year that they really break through. And then, you know, for Chris Del Conte, how do you view the men's basketball program? Do you want to treat it like a big boy program? Or are you looking at the potential buyout and saying we're not paying, I think, you know, over $13 million for a basketball coach to leave, you know? And of course, that's a, you know, when you pay that kind of money, it's a, you know, president thing. Like, what does Greg Finvest think, and the regents and finding the money and all that stuff. So once the season ends, if it ends like we think it's going to end in a Big 12 tournament, it's going to, you know, there's going to be a lot of tough questions asked about the people that ultimately matter the most in this conversation about the Texas basketball program. So I think that, you know, just that TCU loss, we just kind of headed towards the regular season. It was like, okay, well, Texas is going to beat TCU and get in the NCAA tournament. And from that point, it just, you know, if you talk to people around Texas, really wasn't much of a conversation because of that buyout. But now, I mean, does that change things? I don't know. I think that remains to be seen, and something that, you know, I guess details will emerge or maybe not emerge because there's not that much conversation about it. Just kind of, you know, moving on to next season. I don't know. It'll be obviously something interesting to follow because I know Texas fans, my goodness, the message board on Orange Blitz. Oh my God. It's just over and over and over and over and over again. The life of covering Texas basketball. And with that, we will wrap up Dropping Dimes episode 31 on theyak.com/Austin. I'm Dustin McComas of orangebloods.com. Make sure you get to theyak.com. Check out all of the great podcast content. It seems like we're adding new people by the day. I'm seeing some new podcasts on there covering all sorts of things, like the life of a mother. I saw that podcast. I love that we're getting some female voices at theyak.com/Austin. I'm really excited about that. We expand the topics we cover, the voices we have. And because in the end, you want it to be not just about sports or Texas sports or whatever. You know, this is supposed to be an Austin thing. And I think over time, listeners and subscribers will start to see that it's just so much more than that. And we're very excited about where this product is going. I've got some plans potentially to kind of launch my own podcast that will sometimes sports, sometimes food, sometimes nightlife, sometimes travel, sometimes what's going on in the city, all sorts of things. I'm excited to potentially tackle that when I get some time to really dive into it once this basketball season ends. So get to theyak.com/Austin and check out all the great podcast content. But in the meantime, thank you for listening again to the Drop and Dimes podcast on theyak.com. I am Dustin McComas from orangebloods.com. And the next time I talk to you will probably be after Texas plays Kansas in the Big 12 tournament Thursday night, approximately 8:30 p.m. I say approximately because with these tournaments, when you're the final game of the night, you just never know if the games are going to go on schedule or they're not. Chances are they're not. So plan for approximately 8:30 p.m., but probably later than that. So until next time, have a great week. Thank you for listening. Take care.